You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, Mel. Good to be with you.
It's great to be here with you. And we're here today to talk about your upcoming book, The Leadership Compass. And in your book, you emphasize these three areas of strength that all leaders must have developed: business intelligence, social intelligence, emotional intelligence. Those are the three pillars. And today we're here to talk about BQ.
Yeah. And I'm going to just do a slight correction there, because they're actually skill areas rather than strength areas. They're skills. And one of the things that I talk about is that, like any skill, it can be learned and mastered with disciplined practice. So these are skills that any person who wants to be an excellent leader can learn.
Thank you for clarifying that. I'm going to kick us off with a couple of questions about your experiences. Tell us, Michelle, what is it about the question, who are you called to become, that was so powerful for you on your career journey, and why?
So when that question was posed to me, I was actually at an executive development experience when I was working for the National Australia Bank. And all new PU leaders, so performance unit, so the bank was divided up into performance units, and I was a performance unit leader. And every new performance unit leader would go on this experience. And the facilitator, Colin, he was a crack up, he would have this exercise where you'd go and grab a card from a, you know, a pile of cards, and it was, you would reflect on that card. Anyway, my card was that said, who are you called to become? And I looked at it and I thought, that's interesting. Who am I called to become? And then we did some more activities, etc. So this was all about leadership, and it was all about executive or C-suite leadership, you know, how to run the bank. And it occurred to me that I'd never really considered. I think I innately knew what I was doing and who I was called to become, but I'd never really articulated it. And I was then asked to articulate who I was called to become. And it was a really profound experience for me, because I had to stop, breathe, reflect on who I was, how I'd got to where I'd got to, the impact that I had, and the impact that I wanted to have, and who I wanted to be in the world. So yes, I did take that question beyond my role at the bank. I thought about it in terms of, why was I born? Why am I here? There's an old saying that I've heard many times, which is, the most important day of your life is not the day that you were born. It's the day that you figure out why you were born. That was my day, or it began the process for that day.
I appreciate you sharing that. So what I'm circling around here is, who is Michelle, and how did some of these things unfold in your career path? So tell us about your experience of being promoted to manage a call center, and what you learned about these different skill areas in leadership, especially those that you needed to develop in order to succeed.
So referencing back to the who you called to become, I think the lesson there for me was to stop and consider. I had been told my entire life that I was a leader, in varying different ways. And I'd been told it overtly, or I had been given roles, whether it was in sport or whether it was in at school or in work, that reinforced that I was someone who led. And I took, as Susan calls it, the mantle of leadership with great enthusiasm. And I was very, very keen to be a leader. But I'd never stopped to consider, who was I as a leader, and what did that actually mean? And the things that I've learned in hindsight, but I guess fortunate enough on the way through to kind of absorb some of it almost by osmosis, was that you can't over rely on one skill set that you may have a natural affinity with. Now, my natural affinity is, I am very good at communicating. I'm very persuasive. I do kind of get people to do what I want them to do, so I can influence. But my EQ skills, so my people skills, my relationship management skills are very, very good. But I got some lessons on the way through that taught me that I also needed to build other skill sets. And some of those lessons were subtle and some were less subtle. But I think every time I got a promotion, and yeah, it's actually interesting talking to you now, Mel. I'm having one of those moments of, I've just had a bit of an aha moment. My promotions were often really big jumps. But for whatever reason, sometimes I was chosen to do a big jump within an organization, or sometimes I catapulted myself. So it's time to exit or move into the next big jump. So I enjoyed being stretched. Even when I didn't enjoy it, I knew I was enjoying it. And as part of those big jumps, people saw in me that I had some capability and capacity that perhaps I didn't see in myself, but there were also lessons in, okay, now you're at a new level. And I'm kind of reluctant to talk about levels because I don't want to be hierarchical, but now you're at a different level and you need some new skills. Right, let's crack on and learn these new skills. And part of learning those new skills is I didn't have room for the old skills that I was very comfortable with, even though I wanted to stay with some of those skills. But some of those new skills that I had to learn, I had a real, oh, right, this is what it takes to be at this level. Now, my guidance to women right now is understand that. Don't get there and work out, oh, crap, this is what I need. In hindsight, I would have liked to have been a lot more prepared and say, okay, these are the skills I need to develop and demonstrate to be ready for that skill. Now, ready for that job. But as we're talking, Mel, I really am thinking out loud here, listeners, or I'm reflecting out loud. Because of my lifelong love of learning, my enthusiasm for putting my hand up to be developed in whatever was going on. You know, if there was a training course or whatever, I'd go, yes, I'll go, because I'm sure I'll be able to use that at some point. I think there was that enthusiasm to learn, my willingness to take risks and put myself in uncomfortable situations, i.e. my old boss, Steve, used to say, well, Michelle, if you're in pain, you must be learning. So I think there's a bunch of things there, Mel, that I'm now literally reflecting on in the moment that says I was showing my readiness for roles with more authority because of my willingness to learn, my willingness to take risks, but of course, my willingness to hone skills and listen to people about and watch people say, these are the skills that you need. Would I have been able to articulate that at the time? I don't know, but I knew who I was. So coming back to the who are you as a leader, back then, perhaps, you know, if we look at, say, 25 years ago, I would have said, oh, yeah, hell yeah, I'm a leader because I lead people and I get tasks done and what have you. But I was also very committed to putting myself in a situation where I could continue to hone my skills to be even better and better and better. But I didn't know that overtly at that time. I just kind of inherently did that.
So listeners, I want to point to something Michelle said a moment ago about no longer being able to rely on her strong emotional intelligence and social intelligence skills. And it reminded me of episode 109, which was about making the transition from expert to executive. And part of what we talked about then was things you have to let go of and things you have to delegate.
Absolutely.
So Michelle, I wonder if you might tell us about or reflect on the moment when it was articulated to you these different areas of skills that leaders must have, and when it became clear in some new language, let's say, that business intelligence is oftentimes a missing piece for women.
Yeah. There's two stories I want to tell. One is the oh shit moment when I realized I had a skill gap, and listeners, and particularly people, women, and that have worked with me will have heard this story before. I decided to leave Telstra after a 15-year career there. And I was then recruited by a former supplier that I'd been the relationship manager for. And when I was recruited for this commercial director's role, I suddenly realized, oh shit, they think I'm smarter than I am. I've got these responsibilities that I don't know what I'm doing here. I've got a skill gap. And it was around my financial acumen. And I was a very astute businesswoman, but I had, in all honesty, Mel, I had over-relied on my EQ and my SQ skills. And as a result of over-relying on them, they have a shadow side, which means it was crowding out my BQ and most particularly my financial acumen. And quite honestly, if you haven't got financial acumen, it's hard to be strategic as well. So that strategic piece as well. I think I was okay. I was actually okay commercially. I kind of knew, you know, one plus one needs to equal two. I'd grown up in call centers. So some numbers or the way to assemble people for high performance linked to the business was pretty innate to me. But the nuts and bolts of financial acumen and then the ability to set strategy, I had a big oh shit moment. So I set about, you know, closing that gap. And I guess the other thing too with that role, Mel, is I became a strategic individual contributor. And I had always got a lot of joy and fulfillment and status from the number of people that I led directly and indirectly. I'd led very, very large call centers and teams and what have you. And suddenly I was a strategic individual contributor in this organization. So, you know, my two-up manager was the CEO. And I didn't have people. So these strengths and joys and loves, these things that gave me fulfillment in my role weren't there. So I struggled. I really struggled to redefine leadership. And I struggled for a good 6 months to, number one, address a skill set that I needed to address. And number two, transition from expert to executive. And it did mean that I had to learn to let go of my need to have people reporting to me. Now, I was very unhappy. I was really unhappy. And it's one of the most challenging periods of my life, personally and professionally. But part of coming out the other side, obviously I came out the other side, was realizing, look at the skills that I built there. It was a matrix style setup organization. I had to learn influencing. I had to influence my internal peers, including internal peers who were somewhat resistant to me and the fact that I needed to deliver commercial outcomes, blah, blah, blah. I had to influence my clients. So my natural relationship management skills just lifted a whole other level with this layer of business intelligence acumen. It became, and I remember my boss at the time, Denise Pitt, my amazing friend and mentor, she said to me on my first or second week, Michelle, this is going to be the best course on general management. This job will be your best course on general management that you can ever do. And my God, she was right, because I honed these skills, but shit, it was uncomfortable. Because I had to stop relying on the things that brought me fulfillment, had previously brought me fulfillment, and learn new ones. And I did learn. I learned to love numbers. I learned to love a P&L. I learned to love doing top-down, bottom-up budgeting, pricing models. I'd still love a pricing model. All of the things that I learned these new skills, and I learned the joy of helping a business grow. Really, really having a hand in helping businesses grow. So that's a great reflection. Thanks, Mel. I feel really like awesome reflecting on that in that lens. Yeah.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I want to ask, what became really clear for you when you first met Susan Colantuono?
So one of the things, oh God, what became clear, I just had so many what the hell moments. So I'd read Susan's book, watched the TED Talk, cool. And then I remember I was in New Jersey. We're at a client's, sitting at the back of the room. There was 30 women there going through our program about the missing 33%. And I'm scribbling notes and going, what the hell, what the hell, what the hell? And I turned to Susan and I said, why hasn't anyone told me this? And where were you 25 years ago when I needed you? Because I've been told about how to be a great communicator and lead teams and have people love me and blah, 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 blah. But no one's told me the importance of running a business. No one's told me that I have to have business strategic and financial acumen. And she just said, it doesn't matter. You know now, you're here now, and now you can do something about it. Interestingly, I had been told, Mel, but it had been told in such an oblique way, which this nebulous feedback that women get. And also, I think in an oblique way, like there's kind of an assumption that you'll kind of get it by osmosis somehow. But then, and I'm talking about women now, so we kind of go, oh, okay, righto, we'll listen to this vague, nebulous feedback and think, oh, right, that's what I have to do. I have to learn to read a balance sheet, a P&L. Right, gotcha. No, we're not getting that overt feedback. But then on the flip side of it as well, my social conditioning as a woman teaches me that here is my role in society. Even as a businesswoman, you've got to be the calm, capable, nurturing, compassionate people person. And that's what I paid attention to because that's what I heard it took to be a good leader. Now, the truth is that it does take that, but holy hell, unless you know how to run the business, there's no point being a great people person because you're going to make dumb decisions and you're not going to take the business forward. So I was having all of this. I had rage. I had absolute rage. But then, okay, so here you go. I can retrofit this over my back catalog, my career, and now I can do something about it and I can continue to teach myself. Because I can tell you right now, listeners, you don't just learn it once. I continue to learn every new board I join, every new organization I consult to, whatever. I have to keep honing my skills. But that was the moment I went, brr, why isn't this happening?
Okay, so I'll just echo for new listeners, the things that are under this umbrella of business intelligence are business, strategic, and financial acumen. So let me play the part of a resistant listener for a moment and ask you the question, well, Michelle, if I don't want to be the CEO or the top executive of a big company, does BQ really matter for me and why?
Mel, unless you can tell me that your current job, your current boss, and the current conditions will stay as they are forever, you need to learn how to run the business. So right now, no matter where you sit in your organization, no matter what career stage you're at, you can develop and demonstrate business strategic and financial acumen. Why is it important? Because when we do our work with our employer, we're in a contract. We do stuff, they pay us. Now, the stuff that we have to do is our employers don't employ us because they go, oh, I'll be a great charitable institution and I'm going to employ Mel out of the goodness of my heart so she has an income to look after her family, etc. No, our employers employ us so that we can create outcomes for the organization. And those outcomes, no matter what level you're at, are important to know. And this is what we call, and this is what Susan has also taught me, is what we call your positional purpose. What do they pay you to do around here? Now, if I use my career again, as when I started as a call center operator in Telstra. So I am little Michelle answering phone calls from customers of Telstra, the biggest telco in Australia. What was my positional purpose? Answer the damn phone. That's number one. Be efficient and effective. So be polite to our customers, give them what they need, but also give them what they don't know they need, i.e., Mel, I've noticed that your calls go up at this certain time of the month. I wonder if we might look at a different phone plan for you that's going to give you a much better bill every month. And by the way, that's important for Telstra because Mel goes, wow, aren't Telstra fantastic? And we keep getting your revenue. What I also have to do is not spend an hour jibber-jabbering to Mel because when I'm jibber-jabbering to Mel, it's like at an ice cream shop. If there's a great queue out the door and everyone really wants the ice cream and the server behind the counter is having a wonderful conversation with Mel about her kids and her dogs and the you know what Bill's doing next weekend and everyone's waiting for their ice cream, they're going, come on, hurry the hell up, and Mel's just ignoring them, they're going to go and find their ice cream somewhere else. So I had to be efficient and say, Mel, you know, I'm going to have a very controlled conversation. So my handling time had good. So bottom line is I had to know as an individual contributor, this is why I exist. I'm not just another widget. I am a cog in a very big wheel and I need to nail my KPIs. My KPIs link to my boss's KPIs, which is also why my boss's role exists. To deliver outcomes, the strategic and financial outcomes of the organization. So no matter where you sit, business intelligence means you know why your role exists and what you're expected to deliver. Now, at the very, coming back to your original question, Mel, as a non-believer, why should you care? At the very heart of it, you want to keep your job. And to be a good performer in your job, you need to do the job that you're paid to do. And if you're fluffing around and not paying attention to what's going on in the business, no matter where you are, career start, middle, senior, at some point you're not going to make a great decision, or you're going to make a decision thinking it's great, but it's actually completely misaligned with the goals or the financial goals in particular of the organization. So we have to have it.
Yep. Or you're going to work hard and do your job pretty good, and one day, several years in, you're going to be wondering why you haven't been promoted and moved up.
I know not every woman wants to be the CEO, and that is okay. But for you to reach your full potential as a woman, and I mean your full economic potential, your political, your social, all of that, you need to be able to maximize the environment that you're in. So we want you to get paid what you're worth. We want all of this stuff. And even at an individual level, so looking after my career, my salary, my development, having business strategic and financial acumen is applicable at an individual level. Hugely important. We've got to make good decisions.
I want to try to give listeners another example here, maybe something from the engineering world that I'm coming from. Lots of engineers out there are project managers, and it can be really easy to think like, okay, my job is to manage this project, manage the people who are on this project. And maybe what you think is the outcome is, if I do this well, the project comes in on or under budget and on time. But the distinction we want to make here is that your project coming in on budget, on time, is a result. But a strategic outcome, your positional purpose for contributing to the strategic goals of your overarching business, is different.
Yeah, and we're kind of getting into some detail here, but a result is something that happens once and one and done kind of thing. Whereas an outcome, what we're talking about is something that's going to lead to one of the pillars of the organization, and I'm crudely putting them into the strategic and financial pillars. So what it will lead to a strategic outcome, i.e. a financial or a strategic one being delivered. Indulge me, listeners, I'm going to use an example from my dim, dark past. So when I ran call centers for Telstra, I had a particular, I ran the National Activation Center, I should say. And I was responsible for around 500 people who would answer calls from new and existing Telstra customers to activate their mobile phone. So yes, I am talking about the dim, dark past, folks. It's when you had to ring up your telco provider to activate your phone. So that was my job, right? You make sure I had the right people in the right place at the right time to answer the calls. Well, yeah, I could make sure that they were doing that. But the reality is, when I used to talk to my people about, it's really important that we achieve our grade of service goal, because when we do that, here's what happens. It delivers outcomes for the organization. So when a customer gets answered quickly, and typically they're in a dealer, so they're out in a shopping center somewhere on a phone, and they're desperate to have their new toy and get it activated. When we answer quickly, i.e. we've got enough people answering the call so people aren't sitting in a queue for 45 minutes waiting to be answered. We've all been there and know how frustrating it is. They get on, they get activated, and guess what they start doing? Using their phone. And that means we've got a delighted customer. Woohoo! Because delighted customers keep buying from you. Number two, they're using their phone. Hello, revenue. We are contributing to the cash and the growth of the organization. So yes, I could say we need to get the result, which is 90% of our calls answered within 20 seconds over the whole week. That's a result. Yay, last week we got grade of service of 90-20. But the reality is, the outcome that leads to is happy customers who spend more with us. That grows our company. So that's why it's important. So as a leader, it was important that I articulated that even to my call center operators, their supervisors, their contact centre managers to say, this is why it's important, folks, for you, A, to turn up, B, to be efficient, don't slack off, blah, blah, blah. It's important because our company grows when we do our job. When our company grows, guess what happens? It's a fun place to work. We get paid. We're likely to get pay rises when the company's performing. We're likely to get performance bonuses. And you know what? The company invests. It's got money to invest in us, buildings, infrastructure, that kind of stuff. So that's when we talk about outcomes. Yes, I can talk about grade of service, but here are the outcomes it creates. That's business acumen, Mel. There it is. That's 101. And as leaders, no matter what stage you're at, but most particularly if you're an executive, you have to be able to communicate this is your positional purpose. And by crikey, you have to know that. So folks, if you're ever wanting to influence someone in your organization, you need to know positional purpose. What are we here to do? What do we need to be famous for? And what are the outcomes we're here to deliver? That is business acumen 101.
That leads us in really nicely. So in the book, in the Leadership Compass, you wrote, women must be known as leaders with abundant business intelligence, BQ, to ensure career success and advancement to the highest level. So highest level listener, this is the highest level that you want to get to, right? Okay. So Michelle, help us understand why in this passage you emphasize being known as.
Listeners, you may have a bunch of skills and a bunch of competencies and be an absolute expert, but if no one knows about it, you may as well not have them. And there are two really important roles right now for you that you need to pay attention to. That is the role of your manager and your manager's manager, your boss and your boss's boss. They are the people who are making decisions about you right now. And they might be tiny little micro decisions or big macro career decisions, pay, position, and parking. So think about how well does your boss and your boss's boss know you and your skills and what outcomes you can deliver? Are they aware that you are a really good contributor who has very good business strategic and financial acumen? Or do they have a picture of you of, oh, Michelle, she's such a great team player. Her people would walk on coals for her, blah, 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 because they're seeing only one element of your skill set. So we have to have the skills, but we have to demonstrate them. And the way we demonstrate them is in all sorts of different ways. That's a whole other podcast on its own, Mel. But the language we use, the actions we take, the decisions we make, or the decisions we recommend. So when we make suggestions, make decisions, take action, when managers or other stakeholders can see that you've taken a really savvy, a business savvy mindset to your decision making or your recommendation making, they go, aha, she's got it. She's a woman who's in the know. She is a businesswoman who gets it and knows about how to run the business. I'll give a very quick example, Mel. Back in my Serco days, had an underperforming contract that I was responsible for. I'd done some analysis, done a diagnostic, worked out there were a range of things going on. But number one, I needed to implement a reward and recognition scheme for all my contact center staff, and I needed to train my frontline supervisors. Those were two areas. Now, this contract, this particular contact center was writing red ink. It was not profitable. So that's the context. So I go into the CEO and a range of other people with my request, which is, can I have $100,000, please? Because I'd love to train my frontline supervisors and start a reward and recognition scheme. They went, you've got to be joking. You're writing red ink. You're in a lost situation. Goodbye, go away. It wasn't quite as blunt as that, but it wasn't far off. And I went away with my tail between my legs. I went, oh, crap, that didn't go well. What the hell am I going to do? And I thought, they just don't get it. They don't get why I need this. And I thought, they don't get it because I didn't tell them. Okay. So I went back a month later to the next meeting, the next can I have some money meeting. I said, here's the current performance of the organization. Attrition, annual attrition is 150%, and profitability is here. I am going to reduce annualized attrition to 50%, and profitability I'm going to increase by 22% in the next 12 months. And they said, fantastic. What's going to enable that? And I said, I need $100,000 to train my team leaders and implement a reward and recognition scheme. And they went, you've got it. Away you go. Now, I put my feet in the fire. I was accountable to deliver those results. And then my boss, well, the CEO later, Bipender, said to me, he goes, that was the same thing you asked for a month ago, wasn't it? I said, yeah. And he goes, much better. Well done. So that's a quick story, listeners, about when you're asking for stuff, particularly money, resource, time, whatever it may be, when you link it to this is important for the organization, you won't always get a yes, but you're more likely to get a yes or yes in a little while. So that's how I, one of those lessons that, did I pay enough attention to it at the time? I don't know, but clearly it worked.
What are a few questions that a listener can ask themselves to gauge their business intelligence readiness?
So things like, do you know how the company grows? So what is your company's growth trajectory? Where are we growing and how are we growing? Because businesses grow, every organization, no matter where it is, has a growth strategy. Now, those growth strategies, it's not just growth for growth's sake. So where's your organization growing? Why is it growing? And why does it want to grow into that area? And how is it growing? So start to ask those questions. What is the financial performance of the organization? Are we winning or losing? And particularly if you're a publicly traded organization, some of these things are really easy to get hold of. If you're not publicly traded, you can ask questions of your manager. But what is our financial performance? Are we meeting our financial goals? Are we profitable? And if not, why not? And I guess, where are we headed? What's our overarching strategy? Why does this business exist? What is its mission? Where does the business see itself in 5, maybe 10 years? And what are the forces that are going to help or hinder us as an organization? And when I say the forces, I mean, you can do Porter's five forces, but, you know, let's start off kind of close. What are the things in the external environment that might get in our way or might help us? What's happening in the economy? I mean, the economy is a bit of a, it's a really mixed bag around the world at the moment. Like, it's tough at the moment. How's that impacting your organization? As an employee inside your organization, think about, I saw this decision or this announcement by the CEO or someone else senior. How was that related to the external economy or the political environment that we're in? Or the geopolitical, so around the world. So you can start looking at, where does my organization fit into the world and what's going to help us or hinder us? That's being strategic, and it's having that outside in. It might be as simple as, what's technology doing? So everyone's talking about artificial intelligence. Everyone's talking about generative AI. Even just do things. Have we got ChatGPT in our business? And is it allowed or not allowed? And why? How could it help us or hinder us? This is lifting up and looking out and going, what's going on? So there's just some real little tidbits to start asking yourself. And importantly, but a way of demonstrating your business, this is demonstrating, a really simple way is to say, in your next one-on-one with your boss, or if you have a strategic mentor, or if you have time with your one-up manager, say, I've been considering a range of things about my development, and here are some questions I've got about the organization. Can you help me understand? And that is a surefire way of indicating she's interested, she's got a learning, an appetite to learn, and she's got the potential to deliver. That is demonstrating. That's a really simple way to demonstrate. Excuse me, take notice of me. I want to learn this and I want to be a contributor in a different way.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Michelle. Dear listeners, those are your little sneak peek knowledge nuggets from the Leadership Compass. So, Michelle, where can people find links for your book, pre-ordering and ordering if you're listening to this down in the future?
Yeah, best way is michelleredfern.com/books. That's got all of the info. And listeners, when you buy the Leadership Compass, you will have access to a plethora of resources that I've created, what I call go deeper resources. So throughout the book, at the end of each chapter, there's a go deeper, which is exactly what Mel skillfully does on our podcasts. Okay, now you've heard me blather on about it. Here's what you do about it. Here's some activities. So that will be available to the folks who purchase the books or those who do one of my Leadership Compass boot camps.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Michelle. And listeners, stay tuned for the next couple episodes. We're going to talk about the other sections in Michelle's book, The Leadership Compass. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Mel.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.